You are listening to a sermon by Henry Neufeld, recorded on Sunday, April 8, 2018, at the Point Grey Interminonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only, and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, I'm going to take a few liberties with the story that was read. Because as with many biblical stories, there's often more that could have been said, but wasn't. And Johann Funk, speaking here a couple months ago, said that biblical accounts are often like Cole's notes summaries of something, and that we can fill in the backstory as we wish. So, the crucifixion and resurrection are past, and what impressed me is that the disciples had a boat. Looking back in the book of Mark, and we had that passage read, I think it was out of Mark or Matthew, about Jesus calling some of the disciples, Mark writes, "He called them, and they left their father Zebedee and the boat with the hired men." And that really surprised me. They had hired men working on this boat. So it wasn't some little dingy boat. They had a business. They left it with their father and went with Jesus. Now, it was probably not too difficult for the disciples to take a leave of absence from their fishing. And Father might well have said, "Well, go ahead. Go off with this Jesus." And to himself, he likely said, "Get this desire for adventure out of your system and then get back here to the fishing business." So they spent 3 years with Jesus, walking the countryside, listening, learning, performing miracles. Then Jesus is crucified and resurrected, and they're at a loss because he's gone. And what do they do now? They think about dispersing, but they have a backup plan. They still have the fishing boat. So their leave of absence is over, and the father's probably happy they got rid of these weird notions of wandering around the countryside, and they come back to the boat. Well, they've seen Jesus a few times since the resurrection, but he sort of arrives and disappears. He's not really with them the way he was. He is not predictable. He's appeared to them twice, and then they go fishing. And presumably, they just didn't know what to make of this resurrected Lord who comes around unannounced and then stays for a little while and is gone again. So, when your leave of absence from your job ends and you're done the special project, you go back to your menial job, you go back to fishing. Peter said, "I'm going fishing." And 6 or 7 disciples go with them. So again, this was a good-sized boat they were working in. So they get into the Sea of Galilee, throw out their nets, and they try all night and catch nothing. And in the morning, they're getting near shore, and the guy yells at them, "Catch anything yet?" Somebody yells back, "No." They look at each other, "Who is that guy?" Nobody seems to know. So the fellow says, "Throw the net on the other side of the boat and see what happens." One of them says quietly, "If he's so smart, why isn't he out here fishing? We fished these waters for years, and now for a whole night. We know about fishing. This is a waste of time. He doesn't know what he's talking about. Casting a net on the other side is useless." But one of them says, "Well, what have we got to lose? We haven't caught anything yet. We could give it a try." Being a little curious, and curiosity is important, very important, they try it. They know it'll be a wasted effort, but they have nothing to lose. Fishing can't get any worse. So the nets are thrown, and of course the nets end up being full. Simon Peter says, "You won't believe this." They pull the nets to the shore and count the fish. 153 fish, big fish. And the nets aren't damaged. So they get to the shore, and Jesus has a fire going and offers them breakfast. But we have to look at least one other possible outcome. what would the disciples have said if they had not caught any fish? Well, we tried, but he knows less about fishing than we do. That was just a wild guess. Sometimes when we get suggestions that don't work, sometimes the nets still come up empty. Sometimes the risks one takes don't work out like we want them to. So even if they had not caught any fish, they still would have had breakfast with Jesus, and that might have been worth it. It's not that they're arrogant. They just know how to fish. And the call from the shore is a call that opens up other possibilities. Possibilities that they could not have imagined. It would not have been surprising if they had resisted the suggestion. Our assumptions about how things work and how they should be and how they've always been done can be a trap. There is not just one way to fish. If someone comes up with a novel idea, we often lack the curiosity to pursue it. Well, try it. What have we got to lose? Usually, when a new idea, a new way of doing something is proposed, our minds immediately come up with the reasons why it won't work. Resistance to change. Maybe it's our analytic training. Voice a new idea and someone will have an objection. They'll find something wrong with it. It won't work because of this or that. In effect, the idea is immediately shot down, and any curiosity or creativity behind the idea is subjected to a put-down. The idea that fishing on the other side of the boat would produce results is ridiculous. It's simplistic. Since when do fish swim on only one side of the boat? So let's not even bother trying it. We know there's no fish there. It's a dumb idea. We've been here all night. There are no fish here. What's remarkable about the story is that Jesus gives the fishers a choice. He didn't say you must do this. He says, just try it. Well, we've all tried things, and we've all had options, we've all had decisions, we've all had risks. Tina and I once had the challenging opportunity to decide about job offers in Manitoba, Geneva, and Vancouver. Each one had risks and limitations. Well, here we are. Maybe that's the risk we took. Jesus did it with the religious leaders of his day. He kept on saying to them, you've heard that it has been said, and he'd quote the law to them. And he said, but I say unto you, try this, try something different. Our scientific training and our competitive nature makes us search for the weaknesses in the new idea. We look for the flaws, and quickly we find out why it won't work. Really what that means is that we think that any idea worthy of consideration has to be near perfect. Some of the disciples surely thought throwing the nets on the other side was a waste of time. Fortunately, someone said we should try it. We, meaning our church and the Menno Simon Center, are in the enviable position of being forced to make changes. This building is to be sold, and each group will likely go somewhere else. Well, we don't particularly want to leave here. We're quite comfortable here. Menno Simon Center has treated us well. But change is coming, and the center is well on the way to planning their future. The church still has to face the opportunity of reinventing ourselves at another location. We have some ideas of what we don't want, but every place you look at is not quite what we want. It has some shortcomings because we compare it to this place, which has served us well. We immediately identify and list the shortcomings. Where can we hang our art? What are the acoustics like? Where can we have potlucks? What's the piano like? All good reasons to stay where we are in our comfortable place. When actually these issues, art, potlucks, and so on, are sub-issues that we would have to address in making the next place usable for us and making it ours. The reality is that we cannot and will not replicate what we have here. We have to plan for something different. This gives us a chance to throw our net to the other side, to do something we haven't done before. We need to allow something to emerge that we might have difficulty imagining. We have to think the unthinkable. Maybe God wants us to try something else, to throw our nets to the other side. Einstein said that the definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over and expecting different results. I always fish from one side of the boat. Some churches have one style of starting and growing new churches, one formula, and they're stuck with it, and they have difficulty considering other options. John Pentland is the author of a book called Fishing Tips. He was standing on the steps of his Calvary United Church, and he saw people lining up at the coffee shop across the street. And he wondered, what would we have to do in order to have people line up outside the doors of our church? His book is a story of one church, and he's very careful to point out that it's not a formula for how to grow a church. But several points he makes are interesting. He says it's important for people to be curious, to question, and to explore, to ask difficult and awkward questions about life and faith. He says we have to be willing to unleash a little craziness, a little enthusiasm, a little Pentecostal spark. We might have a vision that even seems a little crazy, but maybe it's time to throw the nets to the other side. He asks if we can encourage some provocative proposals and do some radical thinking. What would our churches look like if they became spirit-centered rather than belief-centered or creed-centered or statement of faith-centered? Pentland wonders, who are the curious just outside our door? Who are the curious who are reluctant to enter our door? Why don't we take the church to them? Now that's an important idea. Take the church to them rather than expecting them to come to a church building. On one Ash Wednesday, Pentland went to a downtown Calgary intersection with an associate and offered ashes and a blessing to any and all. Some people ignored them, some wanted a blessing, some were curious, and some were hostile. He felt it was an important witness. In an era of emerging Christianity, the focus is less on creeds and statements of faith and more on following Jesus. We need a focus that has much more to do with lifestyle, with what we do, than with beliefs. Focusing on creeds and statements of faith results in institutions and bureaucracies, and they become rigid, dogmatic, and rule-bound, and keep on making more rules and trying to enforce them. They become reluctant to take risks. Throwing the net on the other side involves risks. I have two examples of throwing a net on the other side, and I'm sure you can come up with many more. One is the group that in 1986 bought this building. They threw out their nets. They took a major risk and bought this property. Now, without that action, we wouldn't be here, and hundreds of students would not have benefited from living here. A second example. We were in a small church once where we had some extra money, and we set up an interest-free loan fund. We checked with other churches and social agencies and were advised basically it was a stupid idea. People would take advantage of us, money would not be repaid. Well, we did it anyway. We were able to establish appropriate guidelines to minimize abuse. A number of people were helped through the use of that fund, buying a stove, buying a fridge, helping a woman leave the province who was trying to get out of an abusive relationship. So, in an era of high-cost real estate, I think we have to get away from the idea of establishing more church buildings with more programs, assuming that people will come. We need to develop ways of getting into the community, of taking our faith to the street. Pentland's point is that we need to connect to our culture, and we need to try some crazy ideas. Take Christianity out of the building. Well, I have a crazy idea, and you probably agree it's crazy. Sometimes some of us eat lunch at one of two pubs after church. Service there is often slow. There's a steady turnover of servers from week to week. Presumably, though I don't know, they have trouble keeping staff. Well, why doesn't our church do something about that? We could offer to provide serving staff as volunteer servers for Sunday lunches. Instead of sitting there and complaining about slow service, we could actually do something. That is, do something other than finding another eating place. I'd love to see some of you serving beer. I'd love to see Gary Jensen and Rob Thiessen, our conference ministers, serving us. I warned you, it's a crazy idea. Our website might say, join us and serve beer on Sundays. Last summer, Paul Martin, speaking here, said the Anabaptist vision of the past served us well. Then he said, we no longer live in the 16th century. The threat of military service, the threat of being killed, is past. He said, we are all already deeply integrated into North American culture. The challenge facing the church and the Christians is to live with integrity in our culture. And he said, we need to come to grips theologically and spiritually with the reality that we are the world. Paul said that we should liberally share our distinctiveness. If it's worth anything to us, it's worth the same to the rest of the Christian church and the world. So we need to develop a sacred and creative process that nurtures our curiosity, that fosters a spirit of wonder. Let's see where we should throw our nets. In conclusion, let's follow Jesus' advice. Let's throw our net on the other side. Let's take some risks. Let's break a rule now and then. And let's listen to the voice from the shore.